There are three questions that people in your country are constantly asking you.
That quality of a team player, if we could develop that one, that would be huge.
A team must be able to count on you when it counts.
Hi, this is Jim Tressel, and I'm thrilled to announce that this is our inaugural episode of It's All About the Team. And you couldn't have a great inaugural episode if you didn't have a great inaugural guest. And we have the best of all time. In my short lifetime of over 70 years, the person that I have learned more from about leadership, about teamwork, about trying to add value to others, outside of my mom and dad,
sure,
is John Maxwell. Now, those of you that are tuning in that have been in and around business or organizations and you've been working hard to create the best team that you can, know John Maxwell. Those of you in the sports arena, I'm sure you know John Maxwell. I probably first got to know him through watching how he worked with John Wooden, one of my heroes.
Yes.
And as I began reading about John Maxwell and using his books, it just became something that my teams could not function without John Maxwell. Now, John, I'm going to give him some stats about you. You know how stats are.
I know.
You know.
Yeah.
But John's written over 130 books. 12 have sold over 1 million copies.
Yeah. Now we just stop here, Coach. Just for a moment. You have to understand, if you've written that many books, the only qualification is you have to be old. If you're not old, you can't write that many books. You got to be an old man. So go ahead. Well, I just want to put these stats in the right perspective here.
I think over 50,000 people are in your leadership.
Yeah,
the
coaches. They're coaches.
They're coaches.
John Maxwell coaches. We have 51,172 countries.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have the John Maxwell Foundation with over 4.5 million people being impacted all over the world.
We've trained, that's how many leaders we've trained in every country of the world,
But let me bring it personal. So I had read a lot of John Maxwell. When I began reading John Wooden, one of the things John Wooden said is drink deeply from good books.
That's exactly
especially
right.
The Bible.
Yeah.
And so I began becoming a reader. And I was a math student and growing up. I was not a reader, English, history.
Sure.
But when John Wooden said drink, start reading.
Drink deeply.
And so as I started reading more and reading more and reading coaches and so forth, and then somehow, some way, I saw the connectivity between you and John Wooden. I began reading your things and Zig Ziglar and folks like that.
Great friend.
Well, fast forward to 2004, and we had just won the national championship in 2002.
That's right.
Got beat by the team up north in 2003, the only time we lost to them.
Yes.
And it kept us from going to the national championship again. And then we were going to have a young team. And every year we studied a book as part of our curriculum during preseason when we were really training and so forth. And we decided that the book for that year would be Today Matters.
Sure.
By John Maxwell.
Sure.
And I remember calling you up and saying, Mr. Maxwell, we're studying your book. Is there any way you could come and be with us the week of the Michigan game? Because if we lose this one, I'll be out of business. And we really need to win this one. And we're going to have a young team.
Yeah, sure.
And so we studied that book. And, you know, we were 3-0. Then we were 3-3. And then all of a sudden we got on a roll and Michigan came into our stadium and they were ranked in the top five or so and probably favored to win the game. And I remember you talking to our team on Friday night.
Yes.
Culminating that whole thing, Today Matters. And remember we had the countdown clock.
Oh, I'll never forget going to the locker room and the first thing I see is a Today Matters clock. I got a picture of that really quickly. Yes, I remember it well. And I grew up in Ohio, so you have to understand I was a Ohio State fan already. So when you called me, and would I do the game? It's sure, I'll cancel 5 other events. You know what I mean? I'm going, won't be at my mother's birthday, but other than that, you know, it was kind of like touchdown. I could hardly wait to come up and be with you. And I'll never forget that first time. And and that game, and then we just developed this Ohio State Michigan relationship.
That's right. We got a contract.
Yeah, yeah.
And the contract was, we told John every Friday night before we play the team up north, some people like to call it, we would like him to speak, and that contract would go as long as we win the game.
That's exactly right.
It'd be very simple terms.
Very simple terms.
And we also said, John, when we go away, we have to ride a bus.
Yeah.
And so you have to be willing to get on the bus.
I got on the bus.
You got on the bus with us and rode through rural Ohio up to Ann Arbor, Michigan. And
well,
we went
fun.
Seven straight victories. You were undefeated.
Yes, I was.
And
so totally saved your career.
Right.
Without any question. You know, Coach, it was so much fun. And, of course, being an Ohio State fan and falling in love with your leadership and your coaching and the great job you did at Ohio State, I can tell you that some of the highlights of my life were coming up and just being with you. Our little time we'd have together, not a lot of time because you're coaching a team. You've got to do that. But then allowing me to talk to the players and have that. And remember, can I tell one quick story?
Absolutely.
Okay. I know what, this is so much fun. The first time the third time I was up there, after you got that winning record against Michigan, okay, and when you got the four wins, because you went on that roll, remember I asked the players on Friday night, I said, how many of you know what it's like to beat a Michigan team? And, of course, all the upperclassmen all raised their hand because they were undefeated. And then I'd say, now, you have to understand, the only ones that couldn't raise their hand in this room are you freshmen. I mean, because you never played them. So it's okay. What we'll do is, after the game tomorrow, I'll come into the locker room. And I looked at these freshmen and I said, and I'm going to ask you, how many of you know what it's like to beat a Michigan team? And you, for the first time, are going to be able to raise your hand. And I kid you not, Coach, you know this. In the middle of that fourth quarter, we knew we had that game. Those freshmen, Mr. Maxwell, going to ask the question. I'm going to ask. And remember, after about the second year, ESPN came in and recorded it because, you know, all those freshmen had their hands up in the air. And then I would also say, now, if I went over to the team up north, went to their locker room and asked them, how many of you know what it's like to beat an Ohio State Buckeye team? I said, there wouldn't be anybody raise their hand. They don't have a clue. And that was so much fun. To watch those freshmen in that fourth quarter, man, Mr. Maxwell, going to ask the question. And it was a blast. You just added so much.
One last story, and then we'll get into teaching teamwork, okay?
So, yeah. Sorry we didn't do teamwork today on this podcast,
right.
But great stories.
So
oh, yeah.
This is our winner's manual.
Oh, yes.
And we talk all the time that the team is above everything.
Yep.
And there was a moment when you were leafing through the winner's manual, mm-hmm. you recall, and you found a page.
Oh, my, yes.
That talked about the things that don't take talent.
That's exactly right.
And tell the viewers about the book you wrote.
Well, first of all, that manual is like gold. I went through and I read everything in it. And that's when I realized that you were not only a really great coach, but you understood how to build a team. It's one thing to inspire people, and you do that on a team. But it's another thing to know how a team works. And one of the things I'm so excited about his teamwork podcast is Coach knows how a team works. In other words, he knows more than just the inspirational part of it. He knows the technique. He knows the pieces. It's like teamwork is like putting a puzzle together. There are several pieces. And I've never met anybody that I felt understood teamwork better than you. So when you said you're going to do this podcast, I got excited about it because he's going to help you so much in knowing how to build your teams, because almost all of us, we may only have a team of one or two or three. I mean, we may have very small, but it doesn't matter. The only way you can compound time, effort, energy, money, anything, is by a team. It's got to be more than me or myself. And when I read that manual, Coach, and then you got things that he had a page on things that do not require time. Things like determination, you know what I mean? Good choices, just stuff that has nothing to do with the team, but it has everything to do with if you don't put it together with your talent, you're not going to be able to do it. And when I saw that, I got so inspired. I took a picture of the page. After a while, he gave me a man. I finally graduated to get one of those. But it took years. You got to earn that stuff. But what I love about it is I took a picture of that, And I wrote a book called Talent is Never Enough. And it was totally off of your page, because what you had on that page were choices. And I just want to say something. This is, boy, I'm so glad you talked about this just for a moment. Okay. As a parent, I made a mistake. Don't make this mistake. As a parent, a lot of times I would look at my two children and I would brag about their giftedness. You know, Joel, you're really good in technology. My God, Elizabeth, you're just such a relationship person. Okay. And I bragged about their giftedness. And as I look back, you know what I wish I would have done better, Coach? I wish instead of bragging, because if you're gifted, it's really a gift from God. I wish I would have bragged more about their choices.
Mm.
That was kind of a miss as a parent. And when I wrote the book, Talent is Never Enough, and I read your manual, I thought, I think so many times coaches, I think parents, we talk about, you're fast and you're agile, whatever. And in reality, it's the choices that they make that's going to accent and expand their talents. You know that. And so, but yeah, Talent is Never Enough came right off of the middle of that page. And I gave you credit in the book. I didn't give you any royalties, but I gave
just your time is my royalty.
Okay. Well, anyway, but isn't that fun? But yep. I really got the idea. Talent's Never Enough from your team manual.
Wow.
Fun.
So we're going to start talking about, it's all about the team. And here's the advice and expertise that I want to glean from our time together. So we want this to be able to add value to families, to teams,
sure,
to companies, to nonprofits, to communities, to countries, to the world. And I know that's what your goal has been.
Totally.
So let's start with the family, since you brought up your kids and so forth. We will have that opportunity to talk to guests about how do they build Team Maxwell, or how do they build Team Trestle, or because that's the team first.
Totally.
If that team gets a good start, it's amazing. When they walked in the door to our locker room, I could tell how good that team was,
yeah,
based upon their preparation and the choices that they made. But
totally.
So give us some advice along those lines of family,
sure,
teams, business, maybe people you've worked with that you've learned from them. About how did they go about and build those teams?
Well, let's talk about family first, Coach. You know, when I grew up, now I'm talking about being the child, not the parent, but when I grew up, my father never paid us to do chores. All my friends got paid, take out the garbage, rake the leaves, whatever. So I sat down with Dad one time. I said, Dad, all my friends get paid to do chores. You don't pay me to do chores. And he said, no. He said, it's a terrible idea. He said, and I never will. And I said, well, why not? He said, you do chores because you're part of the family. And I don't pay you to be part of the family. Mm. And then, of course, he had always had a good sense of humor. He said, by the time you were born, you already owed your mother for 9 months of room and board. So, shut up and take out the garbage. And then he told me, he said, no. He said, we're together. We're a team. We're a family. And so we do things for each other. There's no payment involved in it. It's what we do because we're family. And then, when I'm the middle child, older brother, younger sister, when we got to the seventh grade, Coach, he started paying us for reading books.
Hmm.
He said, I put my money where my values are. He said, why would I pay you to be a garbage man unless I wanted you to grow up and be a garbage man?
Mm-hmm.
And so he would pick out a book every month for us, and he would pay us whatever he bought the book for, whatever the book cost. That's what we would read the book, and that's what our discussions were. And so with my children, I never paid him to do chores again, because that's part of the, hey, there's stuff you do as a team, you do as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no advantages of doing it, except it's because you're beside a brother, a sister, to help them. But I began to understand that with my children. And I began, Margaret and I sat down and said, we can't make everything important in the family. So what are the hills that we're going to live or die on?
Hmm.
And I think we picked four. This is a long time ago now that I have grandchildren who are 23. But we picked attitude. We said we just aren't going to let our kids, because it's a choice. Hmm. We're not going to let our kids have bad attitudes. We just that ain't going to happen. If they want to have a bad attitude, we're going to send them to the room and say, when you get a good one, come out and, we'll shove food under the door for the next week or two. You make the choice, but
right.
Get that attitude right. Another one is relationships, the whole area of being able to respect people, get along with people. You know, people won't go along with you if they can't, you know, get along with you. So we said it's got to be in there. And for us, faith was very important. So we said faith is a hill that we're, you know, that we're going to die on. And the other one was hard work. You got to work hard. Nothing's going to come to you. You got to go get it. And I think in building like a family team, I think you just have to, as a coach, father, parent, you just got to say, what are the important things that we're going to make sure we get those done, and then a lot of other stuff you just, you know, it's give or take a little bit more. I think the reason grandchildren like grandparents so much is they've gone through that and they filtered out what was really important and what wasn't important. So when you think of family, I think what you can do is take the choices that they're making and brag on them there and really reinforce that, and then the values that you want them to have, you want to have a values match with your team. And, you know, people talk a lot about vision and where we're going, which is essential for a team. But honestly, the values that we have within us will determine how we even see that vision. And so we always we try to get a values match very quickly. We tell people we want diversity. We want all sizes, shapes. We love diversity. I mean, on a football team, you can't have all offensive tackles. You want diversity. But when it comes down to the values, the things that are important, that's what you did so well in your manual. You just said, okay, now if you're going to be an Ohio State Buckeye, this is who we are. This is our DNA. This is what we look like. This is what we embrace. This is what we play for. And this is our reason for being on the field. You did it so well that I thought your players didn't have confusion when they went out on the field. They weren't trying to find themselves. You'd already helped them know and define themselves by the way you had the values and the DNA in there.
You know, teamwork transcends. So you talked about your dad with the books.
Yes.
And then you and Margaret with the four choices and attitudes and so forth. So I think about how we tried to build our teams in football. Mm-hmm. We studied a book together. We wanted them to be able to learn and apply.
Yep.
Learn and apply. And we're all going to study. And here's why we're doing it. Why did we do Today Matters? Because we were young. We didn't want them thinking about, well, I wonder if
next
we're going to be good at the end of the year.
When I'm a senior.
Year. Yeah, right? Today Matters. And then the same is true with those attitudes you talked about, the relationships and the values you want to create. And so that, to me, is what's so fun and intriguing about studying team, is family team, football team, your business, your nonprofit, your club, you know, whatever. It's the same things.
Hey, teammates, I want to tell you about a project we're working on with Youngstown State University. One of the ways Ellen and I have decided to give back is through the Tressel Institute for Leadership and Teamwork. We've collected a set of successful business and nonprofit leaders to serve as guest servant leaders in partnership with the Sokolov Honors College to teach university students teamwork, leadership, and personal skills. We teach from a foundation built on gratitude, excellence, hope, love, and selflessness. If you're a young person or parent helping to search for a unique college experience, you can learn more at trestleinstitute.ysu.edu or ysu.edu. Links will be provided in the show notes.
I can't go, though, without asking you about maybe the greatest coach in my lifetime, John Wooden. What particularly about team did you learn from him?
Yeah, I love that question. He had a huge influence on my life. I think in his heyday, when he was at his peak, I think he was probably the most coveted person to be mentored by in America. Mm-hmm. I think Sports Illustrated, I think, said he was the greatest coach of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. But I think there were thousands that wanted to be in the mentoring line with Coach Wood, because he was not a great coach, but he had great wisdom and he was a great person. Now, so I want to do the Coach Wood, but you said something that just sparked it in a moment that I want to make sure you catch this. He said we studied a book together. He said we studied a book together. Now, I have a coaching company that just basically is for leadership for corporate work. Okay, in other words, we develop leadership in corporate world. Now, that isn't the point. Here's the point. There's only one thing, talk about teamwork, there's only one thing that determines the success of when we come into a company and we do leadership training. We have maybe 8 or 10 different curriculums of leadership curriculum. So, I mean, choose which one kind of fits you. It doesn't really matter. Okay, which uniform are you going to wear today? As far as we got 5 or 6 different uniforms for the Buckeyes. Okay. The only thing that matters is if the leaders of that company, the coach, the head coach, if you're in that training with them, if you're reading that book with them, if you're in the discussion with them, the success is just off the charts. But when the leaders say, well, that's for the people. That's for the team. And so here, you read this and you have a little study and they don't get in it, it's not gonna be successful. And I don't want them to miss this, because this is about teamwork. And this is how you did it, Coach. I watched you and your coaches. You were as much into Day Matters or Talent Is Never Enough as the players. It wasn't like or you didn't even come by and say, okay, I know all this stuff, I'm gonna coach you in this stuff. It was let's learn together.
Right.
What's John got to say that we can all do better? That puts together a spirit of camaraderie that was absolutely huge. Now, dear John.
Hold one second on that one.
Yes, sir.
Where it really was even beyond that was when the player recommended the book.
Oh, of course. And they have ownership.
They have ownership. After we won a national championship in 1991, our players recommended a book called If It Ain't Broke,
It'll Fix It.
Break it, and find a better way. And it was about businesses that did the "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" mindset, and someone passed them by.
Yeah, totally. Because
so
if
the
they
kids it,
because
that,
they were trying to hold on to what they did,
right.
And if you hold on to what you have, you'd always lose it.
Yep. And so the kids came up with that book. Or one year,
yeah,
the year after Today Matters,
yes,
the book that the kids came up with was Jim Collins' Good to Great.
Good to Great,
because
what
we were good in 04 by the end.
Yeah,
we wanted to get to great. But they came up with it.
It was their idea.
It was their idea.
And in teamwork, the more that you can let the people know it's their idea.
Right.
They, you know, a lot of times the leaders will say, well, how do I get my vision to them? Or how do I get what I want to say to them? I said, you've got to give them ownership. And you did that. But Coach Wooden, we were having a discussion one day. I'll never forget this discussion. This became an all-day discussion, to be honest with you. He said, there's a question I ask every day as a leader. And man, I thought, if this is a question Coach asks every day, this is an important question. So I'm, you know, what was it, Coach? And what he told me was this. He said, every day I ask myself, how can I make my team better? He said, the only person that's responsible to make sure that happens is the coach. And he said, every day I ask how. And he said, so every day I'm looking at my team. I know them. I understand them. I'm in there with them. But is there something I can say today? Is there something I can do? Is there something I can show today that'll just upgrade my team? And that day I looked at him. I said, that's a question I'm going to adopt for myself every day. How can I make my team better? There's never a day goes by now as I look at the different teams that I have some kind of responsibility with without asking my question, that self-question. Okay, how can I make them better?
Yep.
And when the team knows that the coach, that's their number one agenda, that just develops a morale and a camaraderie that connects.
That was a little sign we had on our desks, is what I am about to do going to help us reach our goal as a team.
Yes.
I mean, right.
Isn't that a great sign?
That's what.
What am I going to do?
Yeah, right.
I'm about to do this.
Where am I going to spend my time?
But it's not about me.
Yep.
What's it going to do to make that team better?
How about a great business example of a business team you thought did a great job? You know, sometimes there's thousands of employees, or maybe it was a small business. But can you think of one that they would be great for the viewers to see that, hey, this isn't just about football teams and families.
Well, I deal a lot with companies and business people, but, you know, and so there are several, but the one that, the flagship of all of them, I think, is Chick-fil-A. Everybody knows Chick-fil-A now because, I mean, they just keep growing. And I've been very close to the Cathley family since the early 90s, when they were really starting out. Dan Cathy, who is the chairman of the board, was the CEO, just handed that over to his son, Andrew. Dan, Kathy, and I are playing golf one day, coach, in the Bahamas, and we're walking down the fairway. And he looked at me, and they're just getting started. I mean, they're already doing good, but, I mean, they're not what Chick-fil-A is today. And he looked at me, he said, John, chicken is chicken. A lot of people can make chicken. So he said, I keep asking myself, what is going to set us apart from all the other restaurants? Now he's talking about how to get out of the business pile. There's a whole bunch of businesses. I mean, here's Business Road, just passing all the, I mean, where is that person going to stop and be a customer? And he said, I've become convinced we want to make the best chicken we can make. But he said, that isn't going to make us great. He said, what's going to make us great is our culture. He said, we're going to take care of the customer better than any other chicken store in America. And he said, he started with the vocabulary, it's my pleasure. I mean, and the training. And so what they did, they were already making great chicken. But there's other, I mean, there's five or six places you can go get some good chicken. Mm-hmm. But their culture, the way they treat the customer, the speed of going through that drive-through, the excellence, all that stuff, it sets them completely apart. And I think it's a great... I think it's a great example in the business world of you've got to ask yourself all the time, how do I get out of the people pile? There's a whole bunch of other companies that are competitors of ours. How do I distinguish that difference? And by the way, the culture he chose to train his people, that culture was all choice. It was what's beautiful about choice is anybody can make it. Mm-hmm. In talent, you had players on your team, and you had 10 talented people that you just looked and they're rare, and you had three of them, and you didn't have 60 of them, and right. And nobody's going to get there. I mean, but them. So gifts set us apart in a way that you can't catch up. If I'm a three and they're a 10, I can't be a 10. I can be a 5, but I'm not. So you can't catch up. But with choices, you can catch up.
Right.
With choices, you can make it up. And all of a sudden, that becomes the difference maker. I always say, if you can make it up, it'll be a difference maker. And if you can't make it up, it won't be a difference maker. And so in things right. like talent, there are just some things I just say, they have it, I don't have it. I'll applaud them. I'm going to try to make them better. But they're the star, not me the star. But when it comes to choices, you can be the star. And Dan, Kathy, and that in with Chick-fil-A, he said, we're going to have the best culture. We're going to serve the customer, the clients, the very best. We're going to put a flower on the little table. I know it's a fast food place. I got it, but we're going to put a flower there. And yes, we're going to do all these things, and they set themselves apart. And I think that's so key. And as a leader of your team, you have to always ask yourself, how do I get out of the pile? Because there's a pile, and those distinctives that get you out of the pile are what separates you from everybody else, and that's what really draws the people to you.
And I would bet you that the Kathy family did a great job of not just treating their customers great, they treated their workforce
the best.
Great.
The very best.
I mean, and,
the
and
very best.
Which they in turn would treat the customers.
They don't have people leaving Chick-fil-A.
But that's what team's about is treating everybody.
You know what? It's, when you're a leader, a coach, a team leader, You've got to always say this and make sure you have to live. You have to live this, coach. You know that you want more for your team than even that you want from your team. Mm. And when I say I tell my people, I want more for you than I want from you. And when they know that, they'll give me everything they have got because they know I'm not transactional. I'm not in this game to say, okay, help me. I got to win. Help me. No. I want more for you. Right. I want more for you than I want from you. And I think that's another high quality of a team leader.
And I think the figuring out what it is they want, so that you can want that more for them. That I was just on the phone last night with a young coach who just took over a head coaching job and just moved up divisions, and he's in the middle of spring practice, and I said, hey, it's going to take time. Relationship building and trust takes time.
Of course it does. Yes.
But have you talked to them about what they're interested in you providing for them? How good do they want to be?
Yeah.
What do they envision? What do they dream about? And so that's part of the fun of it. I don't care whether you're a business or you're a team.
100%. What coach is saying is, so you have to find them before you can lead them. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's right.
I know a lot of leaders.
Yeah.
They're not looking for their people. They're not trying to find the people. They already have their set agenda. Right. This is the way our team is. Mm-hmm. Get in the game. Do it my way.
Yeah.
And what happens is, if you don't find them, coach, first, and I think this is a major mistake of most leaders with teams. They don't take the time, because it does take time to find out. You got to ask them questions. You got to be concerned about it more. You got to be more than.
The goal sheets. Where, you know, we had them set goals in all those areas of the life.
But here's what happens when they went through this manual, coach. You found them.
Right.
You knew who they were. Yep. You knew what their hearts. And now here's what happens. If you don't find them first, and you just lead them based on, well, this is the way we do it, and this, you know, get on my train, go on. Okay, what happens is you start leading by assumption, and assumption is the mother of all mess ups in leadership. The moment I assume I know how to lead you, but I don't know how to lead you. I don't know what your motives are. I don't know what your heart is. I don't know what you're dreaming about. I don't know why you came to school. The moment I'm just leading you based upon how I think, we're in trouble because we're missing like this. And when leaders say, well, I'm not connecting to people, when they say, well, how do you connect to people? You connect to people by going and connecting with the people. Mm-hmm. It's all about them. But the moment you find them, all of those assumptions are gone.
And I think you could take the next step, which is once you've found them and you found what they're interested in, then you find out how they think they would like to get there.
Absolutely.
Because then they're a part of the plan.
It's their journey.
And then you can do a good job of clarifying, here's where you said you wanted to go.
Yes.
Here's how you thought you could get there. And now maybe consider this additional way for you to make that journey.
100%.
So let me ask you this.
So good.
A nonprofit organization, any different than a business, or can you think of any examples?
Well, I think nonprofits harder than business, to be honest with you, because I've been in both worlds. And you know, in business, you pay them to show up.
Right.
I was a pastor for 25 years. When they came to my church, they had to give money.
Right.
I've always said it's harder to get a volunteer to give money than it is to pay somebody to show up. So in being facetious, in a nonprofit world, I will tell you this: you cannot succeed without finding the people.
So
in that world, in the business world, you can sometimes say, well, this is the way it works, show up and get paid or else you can go home. And it can be a little bit more matter of fact. But here's what I have found in the nonprofit world and the profit world are very similar. Okay, two things. First of all, you have to find them, find out what their strengths are. And when you have a team, You have to know what their strengths are, but not only do you have to know what their strengths are, everyone else on the team does. Mm. So when I set a team together around a table, I let them all know why they're at the table. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times they're at the table because of position. That's not a good way to have them. I know they have a responsibility with that position, but you got to let them know why are you at this table? And so I'll call each one out and say, let me tell you something. You're very creative. We need you at this table because we're going to have ideas that you need to help us expand on. The reason you're at this table is you are a total do-it person. Once you understand, and once you let each team member know their why, when they know why they're at the table, now they have an appreciation for each other.
Right. Huge.
Huge. Because they're not looking over and saying, well, what is Joe doing here anyway? Right. Well, Joe's over here because he got a position. Well, that isn't enough. So first of all, help your team know why they are where they are, and it gives them a sense of identity, and it also has a sense of appreciation for the team. That's the second thing is huge, in profit and nonprofit both, is upfront expectations. I think this was a big miss for me. When I was a young leader, I was relationally real strong, and so I thought I'll get people to relationally connect with me. And if they like me, then they'll follow me. And I found that there was some truth in that. But I also found that that there were some things that I learned the hard way. And what I learned the hard way is leadership's hard.
Building teams is hard.
That's exactly. Right? So if I'm wanting you to like me all the time, I've often said, if you really need people, you can't lead them. and I don't mean that in a wrong way, but if I need you to if I need your approval to lead, then I'm not going to be able to lead you in the best way because I'm not going to do the difficult. I'm not going to do the hard things right with you. So upfront expectations. What I tell people all the time is when they join the team, one of the first things I say is, now I want you to understand, we're going to have some tough conversations. So let's just right now talk about it, okay? And they'll say, what do you mean by tough conversations? We're going to have conversations you don't want to hear. I'm going to have conversations I don't want to even give to you. Yeah. But I want you to know right now, the day you're on the team, oh, happy day, I'm a Buckeye, the whole deal, whatever. I just want you to know, we're going to have big boy, big girl conversations. And when we have them, I want you to know it's natural, it's common, it's right. And I'm not picking on you, but I care for you too much to let you stay the same. Mm-hmm. And that's a great phrase. I care for you too much to let you stay the same. Yep. So when I'm coming into your patch, understand, I'm not trying to be a bad guy. I'm not trying to be a mean person. I'm not a negative person, but I do care for you. And there are certain things that we're going to have to discuss and determine and make decisions on that are going to tell us how far you go. And then I also tell them this. I said, it's in the beginning, I can easily put a 10 on your head. I can put a 10 on your head. That stops. The only person I know that can take that 10 off of them is you. Mm. So I want you to understand. I'm starting you off high.
And we're going to evaluate.
Yes, and yeah.
Yeah. We used to always tell our coaches, try to keep this in mind. Let's criticize the performance, critique it, but not the performer.
That's so good.
I love you, but I don't like the way you played today.
Yeah.
And we've got to get better at this.
Yeah.
Evaluate the performance.
So good.
But you know I love you, and you know I care about you, and as you said, I can't let you stay the same.
If I didn't care about you, I wouldn't have the discussion.
Right.
I'd just let you not reach your potential. You and I both know. I tell people, I say, if you really want to improve, I'm going to give you a word that you don't want, but it's the greatest improvement word in teamwork, accountability. Mm-hmm. You and I both know that when we're accountable, we do better.
Yep.
Somebody told me they did better without accountability. I wouldn't believe them. I'd say, right. Really? But when I know you're depending on me and that I'm accountable to you.
And the others are accountable. Counting on you. Yep.
We all have to have our A game here.
Yep.
If somebody doesn't come out and play their A game, you're going to get tackled for the loss, and all of a sudden the game ain't going to go what you want to do. That's huge. But I think that's all as a young leader with my teams, I tried to get the atmosphere of they just like me. And I thought that would pull it off, and I was totally wrong. Yep. In fact, there was a day I said, okay, I want them to like me, but I really want them to respect me more than like me. And respect is the hard discussions.
Yeah.
When you have hard discussions with person, and then they improve, they immediately come back to you and they know you really did want more for them than you want from them.
Hey, teammates, I just want to briefly interrupt one more time to give a shout out to a great local manufacturing company, Compco, as a sponsor for our journey. We aren't going to be helping them sell much of their product of steel tank heads on this podcast. They just believe in the mission of teamwork and intentional selflessness. I've known the Smith family since my coaching days at YSU. They've been a beacon in the Youngstown area, providing great jobs and supporting our community through youth programs and local nonprofits like the United Way. The Smith family have been instrumental in backing this project from the start. Thanks to the whole Compco team for joining us sight unseen on this exciting venture. These are team first people.
So one of the many things that I've loved watching you and your team do is go out to other countries.
Yes.
And try to add value.
Yes.
And I remember talking to you early on about, well, how do you go, who do you need to get as a part of that team when you're going into a country to try to change the country, not just, I'm trying to change 100 guys, you're trying to change it. So talk to the viewers about who you needed to get together when you go to a whole new country and create that team.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We have seven countries right now that we're doing what we call transformation in the countries. and we have 28 countries where the president of the countries have given us a letter saying, as quickly as you can, come into our countries. Mm. But what we do is we come in and we add value to them by teaching good values. So we have 38 values. It goes back to you letting your players pick the book. We give them 38 good values that would help any country prosper and do better. Mm-hmm. And we say, pick 16. Hmm. Which are the 16 you think your country really needs the most? So we give them ownership immediately, and we start with the president. We go to the top. There are 8 influencers in every culture. We call them streams of influence. That would be government, business, education, media, arts, sports, healthcare, and religion. And we go to the top 10% of those 8, and we get buy-in from them. Again, if we don't get buy-in from them at the top, it's not going to happen because influence filters down. But the moment they realize that we're here, no strings attached, just to add value to the country by teaching values, again, around small groups. We call them transformation tables, just groups of 6 or 8. You know, Malcolm Gladwell talks about the tipping point. Mm-hmm. How do you tip a culture? So we go for 10% of a country's population in these round tables. And like in Guatemala, where we started, they have 20 million. We have almost 3 million now in round tables. The president of Guatemala recently on national TV basically said our country is being changed because of the values that we're learning. But here's what I've discovered. Well, I did the opening session for the United Nations a few years ago, and they wanted me to do 2 hours to all the ambassadors on leadership. I said, okay. Then I thought, this is going to be difficult. I mean, think about it. I mean, you've got dictatorships, you've got kingdoms, you've got socialism, you've got democracies, you've got a dozen different forms of government. So leadership to a dictator means a lot different than a leadership to a social. So where's the common ground, what you're saying? And so I worked hard because it was 2-hour teaching and with all that background, and I came up with 3 questions that I gave them, and I said, no matter what kind of country you have as far as government structure, there are 3 questions that people in your country are constantly asking you. Now, they're not asking you personally, but they're asking themselves about you, and the 3 questions are, do you care for me, can you help me, and can I trust you? Mm. Now, do you care for me? That's just about your compassion, your heart. Can you help me? That's about competence. Are you any good? Mm-hmm. I tell people, there's a lot of good people that you want to have lunch with. You just don't want them to lead you. I mean, you know, let's just have a lunch. And you can't do too much damage at lunch. You know what I'm saying? And then, can I trust you is all about character. And what I did is, as a leader with your team, you need to be asking yourself that question. No matter how diverse the people are or what you're trying to lead, if you can answer, they know that I care for them, they do understand that I can help them, I'm competent, and they can trust me, I'm a person of character. When you can check off those 3, you can go into almost any kind of a team situation, coach, and you can connect with them. Mm-hmm. Because that, I find, is those 3 questions are the kind of the connector questions.
So those 8 areas.
Streams of influence.
Streams of influence.
Yeah. They get in the tables.
Getting those, I'm thinking about the United States, for instance, with those 8.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So getting those 8 together to function as a team first.
Yes, totally.
Is the key.
Yeah, the cabinet's in the table, the Supreme Court, everybody's in. Nobody gets like a pass from the table. And once the country sees that, they just, because influence again, it just absolutely filters down. And now what's wonderful is we've been able to do that in the school system. Hmm. And we have values training now. Every public school in Guatemala, Paraguay, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, Panama, those 5 countries for sure. Every public school now has that values training called I Lead in the classroom. Mm-hmm. It's in the classroom. I mean, they're having it. They got math. They got, you know, they got language. And they got, so it's right in the classroom. And it's just changing everything in these countries, in the school systems. And now, this is a story for another day, now we're starting to get into the public schools in America. And this year we will be able to have the I Lead curriculum in about 1 million students' hands. But we're 5 years from 50 million kids in the public, and they're very receptive, and it works. It works. The where we did a test project in America and South Carolina, the head of the state of education told me that they did a testing after they went through a year's curriculum of I Lead, And they said that the kids that went through the classes had a 17% drop in discipline problems just by going through the class. But you know that as well as I do. You can have a great athlete on the team, but they don't have they're not making the right choices. You know that that talent is never enough.
So, one quick question for you. Okay. So we used this book somewhere in the 1990s. You can see the Dynamo label.
Yeah, there it is.
Back, a little bit different.
It dates you a little.
It dates me a little. But we used this as we were trying to build team at Youngstown State and the 17 essential qualities of a team player. So I went through this today. And I thought, you know, what would be, if I could only pick one, since we only have a couple minutes that we want to, if I could pick one, I think I know which one I would want to leave our viewers with today.
Go for it.
Okay?
Yes.
And then I would ask you to pick one.
Okay, that'd be great. You go first.
Okay. So the one I would pick would be selfless.
Oh, that's a great one.
The thing that we tried to talk to our people about a great deal is, it's really hard to be selfless.
Yeah.
I mean, just instinctively, I want the ball. I want compensated.
Of course. Of course.
Intentionally working on being selfless and always having my eyes open as to how I can help everyone else around me. And if we could continue to get better at that, we'll never be perfect at it.
Yeah, it's...
It's uphill. That quality of a team player, if we could develop that one, that would be huge.
Huge.
That would be the one I would pick first.
What
would
you know what's interesting when you said that, because I talk with a lot of coaches, and almost to a person, almost 100%, coaches tell me the very thing you said. The reason I think it's so hard, Coach, so many times is because these players, they've all been stars.
Right.
In high school, they were the man.
Yep.
They were the woman.
Yep.
And everybody's feeding them the ball. I mean, it's a one-way street. And so all of a sudden when they get to college, they were all high school All-Americans.
Well, how about since they were five?
Yeah.
They wanted them on their little
league
team.
They've been catered to
them. Yep.
Drive them to the park. Oh, my, we're sitting there.
Right.
Yeah, it's our boy, Johnny. Right. Look what he's. So they have literally been raised to be selfish.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you get into a world and you say, well, no, you got to share the ball. And it's against human nature. We are... born. I mean, look at a little toddler. I mean, it's mine. It's mine.
Sure,
I mean, we're born selfish. And so, you know, it's been a while since I wrote this book. Let me look at this thing for a second. Okay, I think dependable. I don't know. Maybe the highest compliment a team player could get from another team player, or from their coach, is I can count on you.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something. In the 17 laws of teamwork, I call it the law of countability.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came up with that word, my publisher came back and said, there's no such word as accountability.
Right.
And I said, I know that. Let's make one. I mean, and then I went to this thing, how does a word become a word? Somebody has to say it.
Right.
And so I said,
why not me?
So, yeah. And so we did. And now it is a word. It's a right. word. But the law of accountability, which is the team must be able to count on you when it counts. And I think that there is a confidence that comes to the team when they look across and they realize they'll perform, they'll come through. I can count on them, and I think that's a high compliment. I think it's a higher compliment that you can count on me than to say I'm talented, because talent may never show up. But hey, on that fourth down and you got a half a yard and I'm that offensive tackle. Come right behind me. I'm going to move him. You can count on me. I think that's pretty big.
Well, speaking of counting on you, any time that I've ever had a need, I can always count on you.
Well, it's the same way with you.
And this world's a better place because of the value you've added. And we hope that it's all about the team can add value all the way from families to teams to businesses to companies to countries.
Yes.
So until next time... thanks to John Maxwell, our inaugural guest. And never forget, it's all about the team.
I think the ultimate, lead by example was my parents.
Jim Caldwell did the best coaching job I think I've ever seen.
Pat says all the time, I don't want to bring an umbrella to a brainstorm.
Everyone's input is important.
How do you make a difference?